Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, Patch Adams brings his message of love and life to our community, and former death row inmates speak out on campus as part of a panel on the death penalty. But first, these headlines.
The National Indie Media website reports that anti-war activists have managed to make it very difficult for U.S. forces to use an Irish airport to transport troops and equipment. The Irish airport Shannon was one of the major bases for the U.S. to fly soldiers and material to the Middle East. Now, three of the four U.S. companies that undertake those flights have stopped all traffic through Shannon for safety reasons. On three occasions in the last weeks, activists got into the airport and into the hangars and demolished planes with hammers and color, making them unfit to fly. Flights will now continue via Frankfurt Airport in Germany.
As thousands of students from across the country walked out of classes in protest of the impending war on Iraq, students at the University of Illinois helped to lessen the plight of Iraq's humanitarian crisis by donating much-needed medicine. Students willingly gave away their free cold packs to the cause for this single day of action. Unfortunately, the McKinley Health Center shut down their cold pack services midday out of protest of the efforts. Student Peace Action leader Matt Reichel remarked, "It must be emphasized that we at Student Peace Action completely understand and sympathize with the concerns of the McKinley Health Center. Realizing that our action would threaten medical supplies and the overall student health service cost, we prepared by notifying McKinley administration ahead of time. We told them that this would be a structured single-day event that would not drag on for weeks. As a result, we felt that yearly supplies would not be hazardously diminished. We were sincere enough to give the heads up so as to minimize negative consequences. Unfortunately, the Emperor of McKinley, Dr. Palinkas, decided that he did not like our action and was unwilling to compromise. He forcibly closed down the McKinley centers for the whole day, while other administrators blamed this closure on the need to have staff helping with moving offices around at the Lincoln Avenue McKinley Center. This was an outright lie used to cover up Kalinka's reactionary political views. Fortunately, we were able to collect over 200 cold packs prior to the noon hour, and this will be an immense help to the selfless mission of Voices in the Wilderness."
The National Indie Media site reports that the Australian Department of Defense has withdrawn advertising from all student media around Australia because of an ad bust done by Vertigo, the student newspaper at the University of Technology in Sydney. The move came in response to a controversial full-page parody of defense recruitment advertising, which features in the latest edition. Vertigo's ad bust satirically portrays the Department of Defense as a political tool of an Australian government intent on participating in an unsanctioned invasion of Iraq. Vertigo had earlier rejected Defense Department requests for advertising space, a move that instigated a boycott of defense advertising by a number of student publications at major Australian universities. The ad bust subtly highlights the hypocritical nature of a possible invasion of another country being undertaken by the Department of Defense. Vertigo spokesperson John O. Gibson said, quote, "We see it as a great victory that students are no longer being inundated with inaccurate representations of the defense force," unquote.
That wraps up today's headlines, coordinated and read by Kevin Heidrich. Thanks, Kevin. When clown Dr. Patch Adams comes to town, as he has done as a guest in residence at the UIUC's Unit 1 program for many years now, it is good news. Valerie Sivacek and Paul Kotheimer covered this week's events.
Patch Adams, a medical doctor and clown who believes healing should be a loving human interchange, not a business, visited the University of Illinois Dormitory Allen Hall February 17th through the 20th as part of the Unit 1 Guest in Residence program. Adams has offered free health care for over 30 years, first out of his home, then through the Gesundheit Institute, his nonprofit hospital in rural West Virginia. He also regularly travels worldwide to clown in countries torn by war and poverty. Adams' programs, which are open to the public, included several nights of discussion about Adams' life, work, and philosophy. On Tuesday, Adams showed the film Clown in Kabul, a documentary about his recent clowning trip to Afghanistan, and led a discussion afterwards.
The idea is to take love and humor to the worst of human suffering and to see what can happen.
Adams explained why he thinks it's useful to make people laugh.
I'm a fully nonviolent person, and so humor is one of the tools that I use to try to
make conversation between people of different diversity, that put a relaxed atmosphere so that a person can be more relaxed to try to communicate.
Adams, who once vowed never again to have another bad day, shared his strategy for loving life and other people. He urged audience members to take responsibility for their own happiness.
You can love what you're doing all the time, every day, the rest of your life. It's all up to you. You can have that intention in your head. You can make yourself into that instrument. There's no excuse for you not doing it except that you didn't decide to do it. It's another one of the things I feel I would like to offer to people, is the idea you can love what you're doing all the time, every day, the rest of your life. It's all up to you. You can have that intention in your head. You can make yourself into that instrument. There's no excuse for you not doing it except that you didn't decide to do it. That it's a huge difference between working in what you love and working in what you don't love, or being in a relationship you don't love, or being in an environment you don't love. You can make a horrible environment a great environment. And you can't blame anything for your not being a part of a force in this minute for peace and justice and care.
Adam said people don't have to go clowning in war-torn countries to make a difference.
You know, it's not a big deal. Maybe what I'm trying to say is that if you're friendly when you walk down the street and engage people, it actually is not less of a gesture than going to a war zone. It actually is easier if you have a choice between the two. I'd recommend doing everyday friendliness in the public space. It'll have a much larger effect than simply going one time or one place to a place and doing it and then coming home. If you don't take it home, I'm not sure actually what you've done.
Adams told listeners to walk towards suffering.
If you're at a party and you look around the room, you see somebody at that party that doesn't feel connected, that you actually decide every other party that you're going to look around at a party and look for the people that aren't connected and try to find a way to connect with them. Or to add humor to the public space, which I feel is really important. I know if I wear a suit and look like a doctor, that I actually do nothing to the public space. Maybe because of my size, it's intimidating. But I know that it's a rare public space on the planet that if I go around and just walk in a public space, that the public space smiles. People are easier in conversation, which is why I do it. I mean, the whole, whether it's a fork earring or blue hair or a costume, and I haven't started clowning yet. But if you had twinkly eyes, smile on your face, willingness to greet, and an aggressive kind of friendliness, then you actually see that you can make peace in environments. I can pull up the pants legs of my pants and give myself a cute little skirt. And if I hold the edges of that skirt around and walk around with a stupid look on my face, it has a dramatic increase in tempo than the pants down. I'm not sure I can explain to you why. You know, it's not a very intellectual process.
Adams gave a demonstration of his clowning. He explained how he developed his clowning routine.
I wanted to have a specific character that developed over time. And so for the last 18 years, I've been one guy. I fashioned him after a Down syndrome adult. I was looking for a universally friendly and a celebrant of life. And that's one of the bonuses. Often you don't think of Down syndrome as a bonus, but it's probably the purest state of unconditional love you'll ever meet. He's been in 10,000 deathbeds. And he's always too simple to understand it as a bad thing.
Adams told listeners how they could do their part.
Because everyone is asking, okay, what can I do? I'm just one person. What can I do to help lower our suicide rate, lower our self-centered rate, lower our sense of anxiety around diversity and all those things? And you can develop your humor and your loving self. You can say, I'm going to be an instrument for that every day. And when people ask me, Patch, what can I do? I say, be universally friendly and a celebrant of life, and you will bring great revolution throughout your life. Again, my invitation to you is that in every moment you can decide whether or not you're going to put love, humor in the public space. You can make peace around you. You can make an invitation to community around you. I mean, whatever the gimmicks are, it's really about being friendly to all people and loving life and having that, try to have that exude and ooze from who you are.
Chiemi Ori, who came to see Adams at the urging of her friends, described her reaction to the film.
I couldn't stop crying, you know, the reality of the war and then so many kids been suffering.
Ori said she likes Adams' unique style of caring for others.
There are many people who, you know, like just talking and then complaining, and then we can do something, never act anything. But, you know, he's doing, you know, his own way, his own expression, and helping, well, you know, sharing love and encouragement, and inspired us.
On Wednesday evening's agenda, Patch led participants in a series of exercises from his popular workshop entitled Living a Life of Joy, a workshop he's performed around the world from Hawaii to South Africa. The Joy Workshop is designed to leave an audience with practical tools for finding personal strength in agency and true satisfaction in life through caring. The workshop was followed by a discussion, and like many post-presentation discussions at Unit 1, this one featured a free-form question and answer session with topics ranging far and wide. For a kickoff, Patch fielded a question about God and the afterlife, taking it as an opportunity to state some of his professional and personal priorities.
Living is what's interesting to me. As a physician, dying is something I want to make fun. So one of the first papers I had published was called Fun Death. So if you only have a week to live, I'm your man. I'm much more attracted to deaths that happen naturally or through disease than deaths that happen through violence and injustice. I want to end all of the deaths that occur from violence and injustice.
Patch urged students and prospective activists to reject cynicism.
I consider cynicism intellectual whining. It feels like another excuse not to do something for a lot of people that are cynical. You know, it's a good excuse not to act.
In response to a question about the prescription drug Xanax, Patch talked about America as an anxious society.
Now, if the parent has a lot of fear, usually the child has a lot of fear. You now are seeing huge numbers of American children having a huge amount of fear, right? Xanax or anxiety medications are, I think, the number one medication now. I know people in this room are on anxiety medication. I don't want to have very much anxiety, so I try to reserve my anxiety for the things that I can change.
Patch addressed the politics of fear.
I don't feel nearly as much danger from Saddam Hussein as I do from Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Ashcroft. I'm really frightened of transnational corporations, WTO, IMF, you know, those sorts of things, NAFTA. I'm really feel a danger of the love of money and power over as opposed to the love of compassion and generosity.
Patch also debunked the attention deficit disorder diagnosis, finding the roots of the problem in modern culture and economics.
Turn off your TV. I think all that is fake crap. You know, I've been in remote villages in Africa, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't see a single kid with attention deficit disorder. You know, I don't have a bigger suggestion for an average American than turn off your f***ing TV. It is killing the brain. If you
want a brain, never ever think TV is worth a flying. Again, it's another thing we've bred. We breed a disease. We certainly breed a disease that the pharmaceutical companies love. Then we poison our children with garbage. Yeah. I'll tell you, quadruple school teacher salaries, tax the rich, never let a sports figure make more money than a school teacher.
Patch sees his calling as a medical practitioner as related to activism and caregiving on a society-wide level.
Well, I'm sure you hear the undercurrent of what I'm saying. Money and power over have destroyed justice, have destroyed education, have destroyed medicine. You know, we're a depressed, anxious society. You know, what I'm hearing is that we need care, we need attention. You know, if compassion and generosity were the value system with the intensity that money and power over now are, imagine the world.
Patch made the distinction between what he calls the joy paradigm, in which people approach life optimistically, nonviolently, and with a full-on love for life, versus the pain paradigm, which Patch identifies as the prevailing mode of human relations in the current, undesirable society. He demonstrated this paradigm shift in answer to a question about whether he and Gesundheit have been successful.
Success for me is, did I try? Did I give my time? Did I never give up? So I only know success. You know, I would recommend that you create a definition of success that equals your doing. How pain paradigm it would be that you had a definition of success you weren't doing. Duh. I would really caution you ever in defining success as something you're not doing. Always define it within the context of what you're doing. Otherwise, the discussion won't be about success. Your discussion will be about failure.
Students wanted to know, does Patch want democracy? Is Patch a communist? Here's what the doctor had to say.
If I'm forced to make an ism, I call it friendshipism, the economics of friendship. Whatever it is, that if you only have one sandwich and your friend is there and you give half to them, that's the economic system I encourage. So I would actually claim that all of the isms in a world whose value system is based on compassion and generosity would be fabulous, even a monarchy. Because everyone's value system would be feed everybody, care for everybody, it wouldn't matter what the ism was. But if I need an ism now, before we have that system, it's the system that makes you treat your friends the way you do.
For IMC Radio News, I'm Valerie Sivicek.
And I'm Paul Kotheimer.
On February 20th, a panel of speakers presented a discussion on the state of the death penalty in Illinois today. The panel included professors, activists, and several men released from death row. U of I student Bijan Warner was at the event and gives us this account.
On January 11th, former Illinois Governor George Ryan commuted 167 death sentences, clearing death row. This action was a result of a chain of events beginning in January 2000, when Ryan declared a moratorium on the death penalty and called for an investigation into claims of errors, misuse, and abuse of the criminal justice system in issuing capital punishment. On February 20th of this year, the Center for Democracy in a Multiracial Society, a new organization sponsored by the University of Illinois, presented a panel of speakers to discuss the death penalty in America. The presentation was entitled, "The Death Penalty, the Prison Industrial Complex, and the Future of Democracy in America." Professor Stephen Hartnett explained the meaning of this title.
Now, why is the death penalty and the prison industrial complex combined? Why do they combine exert this force on democracy in America? If somebody says to you the prison industrial complex, what they mean is an interlocking network of institutions, police forces, the judicial branch, businesses, the media, universities. All of these institutions come together and they get power and they get prestige and they get profit off of making crime a commodity in America.
According to Professor Hartnett, there are 2.7 million people imprisoned nationally, and another 5 million on parole or probation. Yet the apparent failure of high rates of imprisonment in deterring crime leads some to the faulty conclusion that capital punishment will succeed in deterring murder where imprisonment could not.
So every now and then, the authorities cart out somebody and they hang them. They shoot them. They gas them. They lethal injection. They use the symbolic execution of a prisoner to try to prove to the world that they're tough on crime. Now, every one of you knows that the crime rate has not been affected by this escalation in imprisonment. So they try to kill somebody to persuade you that they are, in fact, fighting crime.
Capital punishment exists within a bureaucratic system where flaws and abuses, such as torturing suspects and the destroying of evidence, has been documented.
And on this panel tonight are examples of what happens. If everybody involved in the system is making money and getting prestige and getting power, there is no counterweight to the system. There's no one to make sure the system works. And so what happens then is the system becomes utterly corrupt, utterly bankrupt. What you have is policemen committing acts of torture against innocent men. Word is you could be disturbed mentally. Police walk, but that's business officially.
But you thought they supposed to show sympathy. We born enemies, they sworn. Among the speakers was Aaron Patterson, whose sentence was exonerated on January 10th. Since his release, Mr. Patterson has been tirelessly working to publicize the cases of other wrongfully accused inmates.
My biggest concern right now isn't really my story, but the stories of other men that were left behind on death row did not receive pardons. There are still more innocent men and women in prison and on death row.
Patterson urged the audience members to assist in the release of other wrongfully accused inmates and in the abolition of the death penalty.
Do the right thing. If you want the death penalty to end, you want the death penalty to leave Illinois, then let's get more innocent people out of death row. Let's show the system that it doesn't work by getting more innocent people out of prison and off death row. What? One love. One love. One love. One
love. One love. One love. Joe Moreno, director of the campaign to end the death penalty, spoke on his experience in debating the legitimacy of capital punishment.
It doesn't even deter crime, and it costs taxpayers more money. That's why I get so enthralled when people try to argue and debate me on why the death penalty should be in place. In fact, I'm going to be at Northeastern University tomorrow at a debate, debating someone for the death penalty, and guess what? The chair is going to be empty because they would not come out and sit with us on the same stage to argue their point. They won't do it. We try. The organizers try to get people that were pro-death penalty. They won't sit on the same stage because once you lay out the arguments, any intelligent individual can see how devastating the death penalty is and how ineffective it is. Truth had me up against the ropes, semi-conscious without no boxing skills. Fear of it makes hair on my neck grow like minoxidil. Watching the clock is ill when faced with the truth parallels observing amateur videotapes of 21 top-notch NYPD cop skill. Filet mines out the kill. Still
Darby Tillis was sentenced to death for a 1977 murder. Evidence then surfaced revealing that the real killer's girlfriend had implicated Tillis and an accomplice, leading to the acquittal and release of Darby Tillis and Perry Cobb in 1987. Tillis spoke of the corruption he had encountered in his experience with the criminal justice system.
Judging the first trial and the second trial, I've been accused in the media for taking bribes in the murder trial. He's now trying to change his name. Judging the third trial is now doing 15 years for taking bribes in the murder trial.
Tillis's case was brought to a retrial in light of the new evidence, but this did not stop the institutional logic from mercilessly pursuing his death.
After spending 4 years on death row waiting to die, my case was reversed and remanded back to the lower court. My fourth trial began with the court headline in the newspaper saying, "We're going to try them until we kill them."
Many of the audience members were emotionally affected by the presentation. This Urbana resident found the evening thought-provoking.
It was a very, very sobering presentation. There were several times when I was near tears because I work with young children, and I think that we're already sending children on the road to prison early on in their school life. I think one of the speakers said fourth grade. I would put it much younger than that. In pre-K and K, we're already giving up on some kids, and we're already sending them down the road to prisons.
George Ryan's decision caused a flurry of reactions. Much of the media's coverage focused on the emotional impact on the families of murder victims. Rachel Dietkus, the program director of the Illinois Coalition Against the Death Penalty, was concerned with the slant through which the commutations were represented by the media.
The media just like sucked that up, and it was just like they just really latched on to victims' families and making victims' families the focus of this, and just saying like, you know, all these guys did these crimes, and they're just, you know, re-victimizing the victims' families of these cases and issues, and it really distorted the debate and the dialogue that was going on with the death penalty as a whole.
You can't fool all the people all of the time, but if you fool it right once, then the rest will fall behind. Tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview. Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying? Cause Uncle Sam got a plan. If you examine what they're telling us, then you will...
An Illinois House committee voted Thursday to abolish the death penalty. This bill is now being sent to the House to be voted on. However, there is still a lot of resistance to change within the Illinois legislature. Governor Blagojevich has publicly declared his support for the death penalty. Please contact Blagojevich and your local representative to voice your support for this bill that would allow Illinois to join the 12 states and over 100 countries that have already abolished the death penalty. For more information on the death penalty and the prison industrial complex, you can check out these websites. The Coalition for the Abolition of Prisons at www.noprisons.org. Amnesty International at www.amnesty.org. Or the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty at www.ncadp.org.
Our attorney is trying to pass the legislature. He's a state representative. I want y'all to go to each one of your representatives, your area, your district, and let them know that you want the death penalty abolished. Call your state representatives and let them know that you won't stand for them to allow this death penalty to exist in Illinois any further.
That wraps up this week's edition of IMC Radio News. Contributors to this program included Kevin Heinrich, Bijan Warner, Valerie Sivacek, Paul Kotheimer, and Tom Waits. Anyone can help create this show, and no experience is necessary. We provide the equipment and the technical training. You provide your voice and your ideas. If interested, please email radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1 to leave a message. Archives of this program are available on the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week, and take care.
That's the way the stomach rumbles. That's the way the bee bumbles. That's the way the needle pricks. That's the way the glue sticks. That's the way the potato mashes. That's the way the pan flashes. That's the way the market crashes. That's the way the whip lashes. That's the way the teeth gnashes. That's the way the gravy stains. That's the way the moon